Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome back to the War of an Energy podcast with me, Joseph Sarkora, and Damon Smith. It's fantastic to have you listening in again. And this is hopefully going to be a really interesting episode, or it is at least for me in particular, because we're going to be talking about a system called Armabella. Now, before you start running away, Armabella, it's like, well, those of you that have been listening to the podcast for a while might get the impression that Damon has tried to package up shamanism in many different ways over the years. And in my personal opinion, Armabella is the pinnacle of this achievement. It's got to be said that Armabella as well, Damon, was created by yourself and a mutual friend of ours. So really important to credit that.
Well, there was a whole host of people involved in it.
Including
my teacher.
Yeah, excellent. Well, you know, it came along at a point, without sounding too cultish, it came along at a point in my life where it kind of really helped me through some stuff. So, Damon, I think in this episode, as an introduction to Armabella, it'd be really cool to give an introduction as to what it is,
sure.
But also link it to shamanism so that people can be extremely comforted in the knowledge that it's another way into shamanism that's extremely effective. So,
I would just say it is shamanism. What I just want to do before that, I just want to thank some patrons. Because it's a little while since we've done an episode on War of an Energy. I mean, they've already been thanked on Heretics. And I just want to do it when we get a patron, we thank them on both. So I'm just going back a little way. Some people I want to thank. Sampo Sotella, Robin Crawford. I'll just go through because there's a whole bunch of messages. I'm still getting the hang of Patreon after all this time. Tim, thank you very much, sir. And we've got... so I think those are the three that I wanted to thank since the last one.
Excellent. So well, thank you so much,
but
guys.
But also thanks to all of our patrons. You guys are amazing, and your support is greatly appreciated. The patrons are more active than I am, I think, sometimes. There's a discussion group going for the power patrons and our founder patrons, and I need to contribute to that more than I do.
What do patrons get, and where can they become a patron?
So the place they can become a patron is to go to patreon.com/wovenenergy, all one word. If you'd like to support us, it'd be greatly appreciated. There are various levels of support, from a dollar a month up to higher levels, and you get different things at different levels. But the in general, it's not really about that. Most of the patrons that we've got aren't doing it for the things they get. They're doing it two reasons I've learned. One is to be involved with us. They are really helping us. We have endless suggestions, great suggestions for episode ideas from the patrons. So we're never, ever going to... We knew we weren't going to run out of episode ideas anyway, but we got tons of episode ideas. We have some fantastic episodes on Heretics recently. The episode ideas were the patrons' ideas. We've got a killer episode coming up on Heretics for Christmas. I'll not spoil it, but the title of the episode is awesome. And that'll be released soon. It's already been recorded. And
I just want to point... Go on, sorry.
But the key point to me is that the patrons of what have kept this going. I wouldn't have been able to continue with this, going back a year. From today, if I go back in time a year, I would have stopped doing both podcasts if it hadn't been for my moral obligation to the patrons to continue. And so that's the patrons are 100% responsible for these things continuing. Which is amazing. So thanks so much to all our patrons. You guys are flipping amazing.
Thank you so much. Off the back of that, I do want to point out I have received a few emails recently thanking us ever so much for the podcast. To the Woven Energy email, and a lot of them are just curious about the status of the Grove, because we've talked about that a few times on this podcast, which is supposedly the membership site where they can come in, get extra resources, extra potentially full courses that they can follow through of various shamanic techniques, linking into this podcast. So where are we with the Grove?
So the Grove is up and running. Such as it is, the power patrons and founder patrons are in there. The plan is, I've been working at Cambridge University for a considerable period of time now. It's going on 18 months I've been working there so far, and that has taken up all of my time. So the Grove hasn't been moving on as much as we planned, but I have arrangements in place where my whether I'm completely leaving the university or whether I'm just reducing my workload there at the end of January, but there will be there is time being made available to move the Grove on. So there is a bunch of content.
Potentially, what we could talk about at some point is blocking out a chunk of time. My wife is talking about coming down to Cornwall at some point, just for a getaway. So we could potentially build in a few days of
That'd be great, mate.
Blocking out some time, we can just get a course rattled out. We can get some really, really good, solid
absolutely.
Material.
Well, you know, you're always welcome in Cornwall, mate. As are all of our patrons. Just come and see us. That's the hard thing for me is getting to see other people. I mean, we had a bunch of seminars. We did one in Austria that was really good. I thoroughly enjoyed it. A Woven Energy seminar. And we had one lined up, but because of the whole COVID thing, it's just had to be put back. But we are still doing it, that's for sure. We're just waiting to see what's happening with all the travel restrictions and all that kind of thing.
Just doesn't seem to be ending, does it?
Well, they do have a vaccine now, apparently. So hopefully that'll help.
It depends how many people take it. People are a bit crazy, you know.
Give it me.
Me too. Yeah, back to Armabella then. Do you want to introduce what Armabella is and link it to shamanism?
Yeah, so the person...
How it came about.
How it came about. God, that's a long story. So you have to go back to the 1980s for how it came about. I was introduced to shamanism properly in 1985, and it was something that really resonated with me, something that almost started taking over my life. It was, I came to it through the martial arts, and but pretty quickly I realized that it was something much bigger than that, a much bigger topic. It's a topic about it's a whole life topic. It's a whole world topic. It's a whole universe topic. And I continue to do martial arts to this day. And as you know, in this day and age, I'm a martial arts teacher. I was in 1985 to a certain extent. But the changes that have gone on in me are that progressively throughout that long time period, 1985 to present, what has meaning for me has been shamanism. And I just view martial arts as one of many ways for me to express my personal shamanism and to pass on my personal shamanism to my friends, basically, like you. And martial arts has always been a way for me to do that. But I was concerned that martial arts it's a certain demographic, as they would say in marketing. And I think the demographic that I was looking for, that I would like to pass on some feeling and understanding and to help people see the world in a brighter way, in a more vibrant way, through shamanism. I didn't just want to address martial artists alone. I wanted to find a way that I could talk to anybody. I mean, when I first started talking to, I think you had the same experience as me. When I first started talking to friends and family about shamanism, I think they thought I'd gone, you know, back and mad. Or, you know,
man, I was accused several times of being in a cult to the point where I was kind of like shunned by my former friend group.
Yeah,
we're all right now, but you know, it's a funny you, when old you're world new to when something, you start doing something.
Yeah, when
new,
you yeah. yeah, when you're new to something, you because you don't fully understand it yet, you don't fully get it, but you've become passionate about it, possibly over passionate about it, and you jump to extremes, don't you? And there is a happy middle way in life, but you tend to jump to extremes early on. And we both had the same experience as far as friends
definitely
and family.
Definitely scared a few people.
I hadn't. I had an additional. Yeah, I remember, mate. I was present sometimes. There was an additional thing to me in that I had martial arts students who I was responsible for. And I had this conversation with them, you know. Some of them weren't happy with my, at that time, newfound passion for shamanism. They were very unhappy. Why can't you just teach us martial arts, Damon? Why do we have to do this shamanism thing? Or why don't you spend more time on whichever, you know, I teach multiple martial arts. And that's another factor of my shamanism. The reason why I've done so many different martial arts in my life is Toshul Teen, isn't it? That's why I want to experience life as broadly as possible. I don't like putting things in little boxes. And so what is a martial art? It's just somebody of the past's packaged up way of looking at combat, human combat. And all those people, they all had lives that brought them to the point where they wanted to package up their martial art that they created, the founders of all these different martial arts, in a certain way. And so in a way, learning their martial art, whichever one it is like me participating in their life experience. It's me getting the flavor of what they've gone through in their life. And so this is why I've always found it bizarre that people are trying to figure out which is the best martial art in the world, you know, and then because they want to do that one. And to me, I have a completely different attitude. My frustration is that I can't do every single one on the planet, which I would love to do, you know, and I have done more than most. I mean, definitely more than 10 martial arts that I've done.
One thing that I would say about that is that, you know, a lot of people might think, well, you're just going to go broad, but you're not going to go deep. But one thing I can say about you, Damon, is that not only do you go broad, but you do seem to go deep as well.
Yeah, well, that's part of my shamanism as well.
With a core group of martial arts, you know.
Yeah, because I do feel that a lot of the depth in the different martial arts is the same stuff. It's not different stuff. And therefore, you know, it's really martial arts to me are something for beginners. It's packaged up in a certain way to attract a certain kind of beginner or to keep hold of a certain kind of beginner. You see beginners having the same arguments in different martial arts about, you know, what's the best thing to do and all this kind of thing. And a lot of the arguments they have are because they don't have a very good understanding of principles. They're still on the level of techniques and stances and forms and different types of sparring and all this kind of stuff. They're processing stuff at that level. And you get really, really simplistic arguments. I mean, I remember when I was a kid doing karate and I had arguments with my friends over whether long stances or short stances were more effective, you know. We used to have passionate arguments over these kind of things, you know. And the arguments would go like, oh, long stances give you more power and you're more rooted to the ground, and short stances make you quicker and faster to move around, so the guys who use long stances can't catch you and this sort of thing. And it's all the more oversimplistic nonsense, you know. But and obviously, because you're beginning, you're not really taking anything into account, like, you know, martial arts is about fighting, and you know, and you see people doing all kind of things that are effective in fighting, and you know, different people, you know, some people who are super effective are using longer stances. Some people are super using. It's just not as simplistic as that, you know. And so, in the same way that all those great masters packaged up those martial arts in the past, and we get new martial arts coming along all the time. We talk about them quite a lot on Heretics. There's a plug for, if you're interested in martial arts, there's a plug for Heretics. We talked about all kinds of new Kenpo and Jiu-Jitsu styles and stuff in our first four or five episodes. sumo and various other things and the development of other things. And actually, just in the first few episodes of Heretics, we covered a whole host of different martial arts. But the point is that they're different people's perspectives. And it's not that one's right and one's wrong. I mean, I think mixed martial arts, MMA and UFC and all that stuff, and before that, you had stuff like Shooto in Japan. Those things have sort of proven that there's not one way. I mean, there was a short period in the UFC where jiu-jitsu by itself seemed to be the dominant art. But that didn't necessarily last. I mean, you got people like Chuck Liddell, who came in and started showing that you could knock people out in mixed martial arts, you know, and this type of stuff, rather than submitting them. So the thing that all those experiences and also that kind of thing has happened back through time. You get a lot of stuff. I mean, the original Kenpo in Japan was all about that. It was about all of those old martial arts in Japan. They sort of died the death with the Meiji Restoration, or they started to, but then people went around, people like Kano with judo, for instance, they went around and picked up what bits they could find that were left, and then they took them and they cross-compared, and that's where Kenpo came out of. And also they invited people over from China, like Kaku Onko. They invited those guys over from China, and they started mixing and matching, comparing. And you get the same thing with there's a certain subset of the martial arts population who want to get together and try out all these different things rather than just picking one and being religious about it. And to me, that attitude is Toshio Teen. That's you know, that kind of experimental attitude to life and to what you're doing, where we try out different things. That is shamanism in itself. That's a big part of shamanism. You know, Bat, Toshio Teen, and Gukuk, we've said, like, the three cornerstones of shamanism, or the three foundations, three aspects of the foundation of shamanism, which is tribalicity. That is Toshio Teen. The fact that those guys wanted to do it, the fact that the guys who formulated MMA wanted to do it, and Shooto in Japan and all these kind of things, shoot fighting and all that kind of stuff. These guys have always wanted to pull bits from all over the place and try them out. And what are they pulling? They're just pulling technique, aren't they? But they're still coming up with an overarching framework within which all those techniques are applied, and that's shamanism. It's a very limited form of shamanism because it's all about human conflict. It's all about people fighting with each other, basically. And so this is one of the ideas we had with Armabella when we eventually formulated. I mean, Armabella wasn't my first attempt to package it up. So here's the idea of Armabella. In the same way that all those founders of the different martial arts, you know, that are around the world, that they thought about packaging up martial arts for public consumption so that beginners could learn it easily and people could understand it and recognize it, and it would attract people. And we talked a lot about Masayama and Kyokushinkai on the podcast, on the Heretics podcast. He did a great branding job on his particular version of martial arts that he packaged up. And that's what I was trying to do with Armabella, but I wasn't trying to do it for martial arts. I was trying to do it for the whole of shamanism. And there were three sort of aspects of life that we focused on in doing that. One was indeed the combat aspect. That was what we called ROC, ROC. And then there was the more shamanistic aspect, which is stuff like, you know, chelicity training, chelicity techniques, and AMSCA techniques, that kind of aspect to shamanism. And that was packaged up as JET. And then where we had people in conflict, studying the subject of people in conflict, which is throwing issues into sharp relief. That's the advantage. Applying these kind of skills in a work environment, it's not as extreme as a fighting environment. And therefore, when, you know, because that's my day job, I try to help teams be happier and more inspired and more creative in their work. And I try and help leaders to be better leaders by creating situations in which their teams can become inspired and feel empowered and feel trusted and be more creative and be more innovative. That's kind of my day job. In the world of work, it's very, very bland across the board because it doesn't throw things into sharp relief in the way that, for instance, human conflict does it shines a more fuzzy light on stuff. And so the great advantage of the combat area is you can see whether things work or not quite easily. Whereas in the workplace, it tends to take more time. It tends to take more time to find what works and what doesn't work than it does in combat, for instance, in sparring. Yeah. So there's a third area, which is one is people in conflict. One is sort of you within yourself and your place within the universe. So the people in conflict is Rock and Armabella, your place with as part of the universe, as part of nature, that's Jet. And then there's the other one, which is people coming together in productive relationships. What does shamanism have to say about that? What does shamanism have to say about, teamworking and personal relationships and working relationships and any kind of relationship? What does it have to say about that stuff? And that was the third area.
Building, keeping, holding, maintaining relationships between people.
Yeah, and making them win-win relationships. Mm. And one of the things that my teacher taught me a long time ago, is that a lot of people think, who don't understand business very well, they think that business is about one company wins and another company loses, and it's about, dog eat dog. It's kind of you achieve your place in the business world by trampling on the heads of others. And there are organizations that are run like that. And the one thing you can universally say about those organizations is they're horrible places to work. And the only people who like working there or think they like working there are people who've never worked anywhere else. But there are organizations out there where there's more of a win-win situation where, for instance, the customer wins through their relationship with the organization, if the organization has customers, but so do the investors in the organization, so do the stakeholders, but really importantly, so do the staff who work for the organization, and so do the suppliers to the organization, and so do the trustees. And what Kat Sensei and Sebastian taught me was that that you can create a situation like that where everybody involved is winning. And that those organizations are universally nice places to work in general when they've managed to create that sort of a situation. So that's part of ICE as well. How do you create that win-win situation?
Jet, Rock, and ICE. For me, they're three aspects of being as well that once you work on them can create a more complete you. You've got, like you've just said, we've got Rock, which is the more martial arts side of it. Well, that's important to a certain extent because, you need to have a rooted sense of confidence that if things do spiral out of control, you can take care of yourself. You have that fundamental level of confidence.
Yeah, but that's not why we do it. Yeah, but that's not why we do it. You know that. Yeah, yeah. But I mean, the point is the advantage to me is, I mean, Armabella is not about self-defense. And it's not about fighting per se. Armabella is shamanism packaged. Armabella was shamanism packaged up in a way that it would resonate with people. So I've got a bit of a elevator pitch. I was going through because we said we're going to talk about Armabella. I've gone through my old notes for Armabella and I found something that Paul wrote. Which I then precede. And so this is my precede of Paul's elevator pitch for Armabella. It goes, change is constant in our lives. How a person responds to those changes can determine their life. Armabella is a system which provides a framework to learn the skills which are missing from traditional education. And in particular, it's a skills which turn life into art. And that's the kind of point of it. And then it says, drawing upon methods from modern and ancient traditions around the world, Armabella uses a simple set of symbols to represent the fundamental principles of change which occur in life. Now, that's pretty much was the focus of Armabella. It was the eight trigrams. It was the stuff, that's what we chose as our main focus for Armabella, was to take the eight trigrams and to apply them to these three different aspects of life. One is Chalisti and Amska techniques, which we called Jet. One is human conflict, which we called Rock. And the other one is human beings coming together in mutually productive relationships. That is ICE.
ICE, yeah.
And
they actually, those letters stand for something as well, don't they, if my memory serves me correctly.
Oh, I just can't remember what, though.
There was interpersonal communication and effectiveness. That was ICE.
That was ICE, something like that.
JET was joint energy transfer, so the joining those changes, those energy changes
together. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, yeah.
But I can't remember ROC. ROC was something. ROC stood for something.
Response and obfuscation or something like that. Response, obfuscation and something. But the bottom line is they just sounded like cool words, didn't they? They just sounded like cool words, But basically, the Western sounding words that I use for the changes, you've heard me use them before on this podcast. The 8 are Jag, Meld, Torrent, Kindle, Squall, Gaia, Shard, and Mia. Yeah. We came up with those words as translations of the Chinese trigrams, the Chinese stroke Japanese 8 trigrams, but they're also translations, but there are other English translations of those things, but they're not just translations of the Chinese trigrams, they're also translations of the Mongolian changes, the words in Mongol that shamans use in order to describe the changes that go on within nature. And so we have, rather than having just a word that represents a Chinese trigram in English, we now have English-sounding words that represent across the
flavor
board,
of the change.
Across the board shamanism. Yeah, so not just the Chinese version of it, but across the board shamanism. So, for instance, the Mongol Jag is Tolka, Meld is Negdech, Torrent is Atolun, Kindle is Asak. Might as well do them all. Squall is Shurug, Gair is Egeldech, Shard is the famous Tairak from Tairak, 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 and Mir is Tengis, also known as Chirich. Yeah, or
The interesting thing, we've already talked about those on the podcast as well, haven't we? The Mongolian terms for them, and we were linking it.
Let's be clear. These are not Mongolian terms for Chinese trigrams. These are Mongolian terms for those changes within nature. Yeah.
The Mongolians had a different way of representing
They're just words. No, my point is these energy changes come from nature. They don't come from the 8 trigrams. So my point is the 8 trigrams come from nature, and the words that are used in Mongol to represent those changes within nature exist, and the words that are used within, for instance, Siberian language to represent those changes exist, and the words that are used in other languages around the world to represent those changes often exist, at least in shamanistic societies. The only issue we've got with English, of course, is because we're not a shamanistic society, those words don't exist in our language, and that's why we need equivalents. Yeah.
What I found interesting about the English word choices is that they're actually related to the change themselves. It wasn't just random words. You're saying they're translations from the Mongol. And obviously that's probably true. But for me as well, those words were chosen because they represented the fundamental aspect of what that change was.
That's right, exactly. And they don't go via the 8 trigrams. They go straight to nature. That's why we came up with them. Yeah. Mm. And so the point I was making there was that, for instance, Take the World Tolka in Mongol, it is not the name of a trigram. It's a description of a change that occurs within nature. That makes sense?
Oh, yeah.
Which you can easily map, like falling off a log backwards, if you understand this stuff, to a trigram. Because what was the trigram originally? I mean, we've had a whole bunch of Neo-Confucianism imposed upon the 8 trigrams. But what were those trigrams originally? They were nothing other than symbols for changes that go on in nature. But this is the focus we gave with Amabella, was to look at the changes that go on in nature in these three different contexts. That was the idea. It grew out of a lot of discussions that we had. I mean, you were involved in the back end of some of that. I would say that the whole start of the idea for Amabella, rather than previous attempts that I'd made to package up shamanism for public consumption, was around about 2011, from that point forwards. And I'd say that we got the guts of this stuff, the language that we now use, the English language that we now use to talk about shamanistic concepts that we didn't have before that, really, that we had that sorted by probably about 2015, I would say, that sort of time period. So those sort of 5 years are when we were working on this stuff. We were working on a whole bunch of different things. Also, translating, not for publication, but for just for our own understanding, some of the writings of shamans, particularly Nakayama Miki, that had been translated like dreadfully badly into English. And we were doing that for, my teacher was involved in that. We were doing that for the purpose of learning, really. And also we did, you know, on an ongoing basis, we're translating stuff like the Xingyi classics. And obviously there's a lot of people, and Paul's still on that to this day, isn't he? So there's a lot of people involved in that kind of stuff. The issue was, it wasn't any one person's thing, but the desire was to address an issue, which is, if you talk to people in our society about shamanism direct, 99.9% of them will have either no interest whatsoever. And it's very often when you start talking to somebody about shamanism, it's as if you haven't said anything. They keep talking about the previous subject. The brain doesn't kind of register. And some people even have a negative reaction.
Well, it's woo-woo nonsense, isn't it? To the average, most people, it's easy to package it up and put it on the shelf and go, that's just some
That is one response to it. It's not the only one. There are other responses to it, like I believe it, I'm a Christian, and that comes from the devil. That kind of thing.
This is why I think something like Amabella is important, because for me, it was about, like, I was one of these people that would go, that's just crap, that's nonsense, I'm putting that on the shelf. But Amabella provided a way in. It's like, shamanism itself is not an ideal way in for most people, is it? Or most people that would benefit from it. It's like, you need a way in to truly kind of get a handle on what it is, and then you can backwards rationalize that onto shamanism and go,
shamanism has never needed it. Shamanism exists in a certain type of society. I mean, pure shamanism, raw shamanism exists in the hunter-gatherer societies and always has done. And it doesn't need to persuade anybody. It's part of who they are. It's part of what they are.
You know, I was having an interesting conversation, debate with my wife yesterday about the education system and the role, what kind of role the education system should play. And for me, it's like, well, it's missing aspects of how to be in the world when you leave school. And I think a lot of this stuff, let's call it shamanism. Let's talk about what Amabella really is. We've got how to interact with and talk to people, how to build relationships. We've got how to engage physically with the world and be comfortable engaging physically with the world. And we've got how to understand your place in the world, how to engage with the world, the universe.
Yeah, how to engage with nature.
With nature, And none of those things, none of them taught in school. And if you zoom out and you go, hang on, let's just put shamanism aside for one second. If you describe it in those terms, those skills are absolutely essential to live a full life, to live a healthy life.
Yeah.
I went through school not having any of that shit. And it was only until I met you guys, and this is going to sound a bit cultish, but you know, it's like, this came along at a time when it enabled me to understand a lot of that stuff. And it completed in a certain way, along with other stuff as well. But it helped me then really get to grips with those other aspects of life and meet somebody who I'm now in a very, very healthy, very happy relationship, got a kid, got various businesses under my belt. I still need to do a lot of work with the whole, let's call it the jet side of stuff, but you know,
sure.
When I look at my life now, post Amabella to pre Amabella, I go, well, you know, this stuff was definitely, definitely missing for me. And I hope that, you know, this podcast up to this point anyway has provided a way in. But again, Amabella is a way in. It's a way in to grapple with those aspects of who we are, the skills we need to engage with life. And at the core of it is shamanism.
Yeah, it is shamanism, but it's shamanism packaged in a certain way. And I think that that leads us into the slight difficulty with Amabella. Amabella worked very well with you, and it worked very well with a few others. But there were people who we were already, or who we were close to, who were able to interact with directly, who were able to, you know, in front of our face kind of people who we were interacting with quite a lot, and we could do this kind of, what is effectively, people have to, if people buy into something, they have to understand what it is. And that's very, very difficult with shamanism, because the number of people who understand what shamanism is on this planet is vanishingly small. And also explaining what it is, you can't do on the baseline. It's something you have to participate in.
Yes. So yes. You have not to only that, but like, then you can't do it in English either.
You have to fill it in a certain way that it's something that it starts off as something that they do recognize. Now, one of the things that they do recognize is personal development. They recognize that as a topic, an existing topic in the world. And that's pretty much the slant we took on Armabella. Armabella is a system for personal development. Now, it's not really that. It's a system for... ultimately, it's what shamanism is. It's a system for dissolving within nature, for becoming part of what you're, or coming to a recognition, mind, spirit, and body, all acting as one unit, that you are not separate from nature. You only think you are. And through that understanding, there's a bunch of stuff you can do. You know, that was another angle on Armabella. Learn some skills that you can, you know, become a highly successful YouTuber, as Joe did, or whatever it is you want to do with your life. You could say I've been a moderately successful consultant in my life.
Rather than think of it in terms of being a successful YouTuber, it roots you and it gives you a sense of self that you can go, well, this is what I want to do now. Rather than drift, letting other people guide you, you can go, right, I'm going to do this. I'm going to put my effort into it and I'm going to enjoy it and just go for it and see where it goes.
So that's a good point, because, as you know, part of the Armabella training was that whenever you say something, I'm not the sort of person who, ... you then have to, pretty much the fact that you've said that, you then have to go and do ... because part of the learning experience.
I'm not the sort of person that would put myself in front of a camera and talk to a camera.
Exactly.
I absolutely was terrified of that.
And I'm not the sort of person who would be running his own business. My family all worked public sector. And I'm not, being entrepreneurial is not anything that would ever have you. I didn't even know that there's such a thing existed in the world, to be honest. I think when I was a kid, and here I've been doing it for 20 years, you know, so it does change you. Shamanism changes you in different ways. And so we try to use that angle, because that's not all there is to shamanism, but we try to use that angle for Armabella. But one of the things we found with it is, although it worked quite well with yourself and others who we had some other stunning success stories with it as well. It had to be people, it seemed that it had to be people who were in immediate close contact with and who had got to a certain point in their lives where they realized they needed something. I think you had. Or they needed some to take a different direction, or to take a different, not a different direction, but it's a different way of looking at the world. And I think that was the downside of it. And so that's what resulted in, it was that experience probably coming around, you know, off the back of 2015, 2016, 2017, that sort of time period. It was that experience that, yes, we can reach people, but it has to be people who are ready and they're right next to us and they're in front of our face. Then we can start using Armabella, and it seems to work when we're in that situation, to talk to a few people about shamanism, or to help encourage them to become involved in shamanism. But we couldn't reach people broadly. And we couldn't reach the tiny number of people who are passionate already about shamanism, but who are not geographically located where we are. And this is where the idea for Woven Energy came from. This was the idea that we're going to package it up very differently. We're going to talk about it in a bit more of a raw way. And so the idea behind Woven Energy was, we're not going to try and persuade anybody. What we're going to do is put the stuff out there in as raw a form as we can. And that's where we started using Mongolian shamanism, didn't we? I mean, Mongolian shamanism is pretty close. Pretty close. Yeah. Mongolian shamanism is an awful lot closer to shamanism proper than Armabella's in terms of the way that it's presented. Yeah, we started doing that. But, you know, Mongolian shamanism is, we use that as an example simply because it's not Mongolian. That's the point. It's so shamanistic that it transcends Mongolia. That's the point.
You know, even I do get quite a few emails coming through, and a lot of the comments do form along the lines of, and I'm paraphrasing, this podcast is really good because everything's rooted in being practical, and it's given me a way of understanding shamanism, what it is, without the whole woo-woo stuff attached to it. Now, that to me is very important. How do you reach the sensibly minded people, in quotation
Well,
marks?
We couldn't, because there's so few of them. Because what do we need? We need all the things that we had for Amabella, right? Plus, so we needed somebody who'd already got to the point in their lives where they realized that the stuff they're taught in school and the stuff that the life expectations, that life's more about being born, being educated, getting married, doing your job, working hard, and then retiring and dying. That life's about more than that. And that we're in our societies, in our civilized societies, we're separating ourselves artificially from nature, which feels funny. It feels wrong. But people who have to go through quite a lot of life experience before they get to that point. But that's what we need for Woven Energy. And it's what we needed for, it's all, what we also needed for Amabella. But here's the difference. The difference with Woven Energy is because it's a podcast, because it's multinational. We have patrons from all around the world, and we have listeners from, there are very few countries we don't have listeners from. And we have, you know, we got North and South America, we've got all across Asia and Europe. In terms of listeners, we've got Africa, we've got people in the Far East. It's wonderful that we've got people in China listening to us. That's just amazing, you know, in Japan and all these kind of places. And indeed Mongolia, I hasten to add that we have a few listeners in Mongolia, which is just phenomenal. That's just phenomenal.
That's the beauty of the internet in a way.
That
isn't
is
it?
So good, man. Those, I know those small numbers. I mean, the small numbers of people have got access to this kind of thing in Mongolia. And it's one of the world's most sparsely populated countries either. They don't have a huge population. But to those of you listening from Mongolia, thank you so much, guys. It's just like that. Just when I found that out on our stats, that was just like one of the best days I'd ever had, really. That's just amazing. So thanks so much, guys.
They'll be listening into the way you're pronouncing the words, Damon, and just laughing.
They know. I mean, I was taught Mongol by Mongols, so they know how bad I am at it. one of my teachers, Bat, the guy that taught me what's known as Mongol Pichig, which is the Mongolian writing system, which is very difficult but incredibly beautiful. He was another bit, you know, I've been blessed to have a lot of great mentors in this life. And he was Bat, if you're listening, you're probably not, mate, but thanks ever so much, mate. Tremendous influence on me as well. That was during the mid-90s, early to mid-90s, when I was studying at Leeds University. I was blessed to have Mongolian people looking after me. Just amazing. And they are the most, honestly, I've been in a lot of different countries in this world, and the most wonderful, wonderful people from that country. I just love them to bits. I've never met anybody from Mongolia who I just didn't think, God, this pastor is amazing. Yeah, it's a fantastic bunch of people, though there's not a lot of them, it has to be said, in the grand scheme of things. I think that we have reached more people. We have certainly reached more people with Woven Energy than we did with. And I also feel more honest about Woven Energy. I feel that it's, I mean, the thing is, we're just talking about shamanism in the way that we would talk about shamanism if we weren't aware that people are going to have negative reactions to it. But the point is, we've got a much bigger audience. We've got the whole world. So although there's a tiny proportion of people who are going to be interested in Amabella, and they're scattered all over the world, we can reach a lot more of them than we ever could if we were doing Amabella.
I think back when we first started this podcast, you were slightly worried about just going after shamanism in its raw form, because
I didn't want to do it.
It took a long time for me to try and persuade you, and you had all these fantastical ideas of how to package it up, and pirates at one stage. You wanted to teach it through piracy.
Well, I do live in Cornwall, mate. I live in Cornwall.
I still want to do that. Various ways.
But, you know, the Cilician pilots, there's a reason behind that. I don't want to give away the Christmas episode, but people might guess, who listen to Heretics, they might guess it. I might have something to do with Mithraism. Yeah. And it was the Cilician pirates who spread Mithraism into the Roman Empire. So that is very close to my heart. Mithraism is an esoteric form of shamanism that I've been passionate about for a long time. One of the reasons for it is when I was young, I had a lot of opportunity to go to Corroborough up on the Roman wall where there was a Mithraeum, which is like a Mithraic temple up there that's very well preserved. And I used to go and do my spirit dance in there, you know, and that's just wonderful. It's a wonderful, wonderful place. If you ever get a chance to visit Corroborough, I highly recommend it. And now I live in Cornwall, which is like pirate central, right? So I've always been passionate about pirates. So it's no wonder. I mean, I had an idea of a thing called Cutlass Academy, which was teaching people how to use a cutlass. And then, and I would still be doing that, to be honest, if it wasn't for the silly sword law that the government introduced in the UK, where we're allowed to have swords with straight blades. But we're not allowed to have swords with curved blades because apparently they're more dangerous. So we're just like, oh my God. Talk about people who really fundamentally don't understand anything. the Houses of Parliament, yeah. Goodness gracious, you know. But anyway, so I'm like I say, I'm very, very happy with Woven Energy. Anything that I do going forward is pretty much likely to be under the Woven Energy banner in terms of my shamanism. You know, I still plan to do seminars at various countries around the world. There won't be the sort of seminar that you might expect when you actually show up. The guys who came to the last one will know that. My stuff is very practical, as you know, and they will be very, very practical seminars. There are some other things that I might try in terms of business and stuff like that. I've sort of done consultancy now, business consultancy for 20 years, and I fancy doing something maybe a bit more product-based or something like that. But then maybe that won't be under the Armour Belt, under the Woven Energy brand or under the Woven Energy heading, but anything that I do around shamanism, I think going forward will be. I'm not just happy with the way that Woven Energy's gone. I'm absolutely thrilled. I have Joe to thank for that because it was him that forced me to do it. So thank you very much, sir. And
all right.
Yeah. One other thing that I'd like to mention is that a lot of this stuff, there's other people to thank involved in this. And you guys know who you are. I'm not going to go through all the names. There's a lot of people involved in the development of Armour Bella and laying, which laid a lot of the foundation. Give us the language that we need to talk about this stuff. I mean, there's my teacher, Kato Sensei, who died recently, unfortunately. But he had a good innings. Was to talk about successful people. My goodness. And he lived a long, long life. I'd be happy. I was just saying that Joe, I'd be happy with 10 years less than that. But and he left a great legacy for us. And Woven Energy is part of his legacy. He's one of the people I learned the most from in my life. But there are many others, and for instance, Paul and others, who contributed hugely to the fact that we were able to do Woven Energy. And you know who you are. And thanks to all of you guys who were involved in Armour Bella and Corsair and various other attempts. And a lot of these people are still around, still involved with us, aren't they? And we still see them. And it's just been a wonderful bunch of people. And I feel so blessed to have been involved with them. So that's why one other thing I wanted to mention was that we used to meet up. Do you remember? We used to meet up in a little Greasy Spoon cafe in Huddersfield and just talk on. Was it a Sunday morning? We used to do it on
Saturday morning. Used to meet up. Have a toast.
We did that for
tea
a long time. We did, yeah. And we used to have a cup of tea and we'd just talk about all this stuff over and over. And what's really interesting, if we go back to 2013, 2014, 2015, that sort of time period, we didn't have words in English we were using a lot of Japanese, we're using a lot of Chinese, I was using a lot of Mongolian, some others were. We didn't have words in English. And out of that Armour Bella experience, we got the words. Armour Bella was a success for a few people, but it wasn't really the way to take it to more people. Woven Energy proved to be that. But a lot of our clear language that we used to talk about shamanism, a lot of that was built through that hard work that all of those people put into Armour Bella, yourself included, mate. So I'm thoroughly grateful for that. So I think that's a bit of an overview. But obviously,
I mean, obviously, I 100% agree with the whole Woven Energy thing. I would take a slightly different approach on Armour Bella, and I would say that it was never given the chance to be taken to the masses. One thing which this podcast could do, but I would say that Amabella is potentially a way in for people more than you think.
You might be right, Joe.
The way
I look forward to you bringing it to them.
Oh man! Do you know what I mean? Though?
I do know what you mean.
The whole package, the whole system, was digestible in a way.
Look, mate,
it was accessible.
One of the things that at the end of January, either way, whether I stay at Cambridge or not, I will have more time for sure after the end of January. So if you want to launch an Amabella podcast or do something else like that, then just give me a shout, mate, and I'll help you with it. But you're the one in the driving seat now.
Oh, dude. Right. Well, look.
I'm happy with what
you see. This is the problem with you, Dermot. You just wipe your hands of stuff.
No, I'm not wiping my hands
anyway,
of it.
Look,
just
the next few episodes. The next few episodes are going to be diving deep a little bit into Amabella, right?
We're going to do Rock, Jet, and Ice.
Amabella a little bit. Jet, and Ice. And hopefully that'll bring another aspect of shamanism to you, and a way into shamanism, and hopefully in a way that really helps you, just like it helped me.
Well, I think to regular listeners,
and then of course, you know, the Woven Energy podcast is an open ended podcast to just go on and on and on about shamanism. So, this is an aspect of it, and then we'll bring it back round to the way we've always done things. So it's just a little detour, I reckon.
What I was going to say was, I think to regular listeners, I mean, bless your listeners and a lot of our patrons among these people, there are people who listen to all of our episodes more than once in this world. And I think for those guys, especially if they've been out doing the practical exercises, when we start talking about Amabella, you guys will rapidly see that this is just the same stuff we've been talking about on Woven Energy. It's just got different words on it, but it's really the same stuff.
And perhaps slightly different ways of applying it.
Different way of applying it, different way of looking at it, yeah. But the same stuff fundamentally, yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Shall we wrap it up there, Dermot?
Yeah, let's do that bit.
Shall we look forward to the next one? Okay, well, thanks ever so much for listening, guys. You can head to wovenenergy.com/start here for your Get Started episode. You can join us on Patreon as well. Become a patron and get access to the Grove, get access to Damon, extra material that's on there. Thanks for listening, and we will see you, or we'll hopefully you can hear us in the next episode. Thanks, guys.
Thanks a lot.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.